All right, we've got the baskets back. So at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Darren, our 10-minute speaker, Darren W.
Thanks, Joseph. My name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Darren.
Grateful to be alive and sober. And our daughter called us at about 4:30 and said, we're bringing the kids over. And so our grandkids are at the house right now. And if it wasn't for my commitment here, I would be at home. And my wife, luckily, she's understanding. Of course, she's an alcoholic in recovery too, but she's understanding. She knows I got to do what I got to do. Keep ultimately a promise that I made. And so I'm here in spite of me. I was fresh out of a second relapse, and basically as close to hopeless as you can be. I had somewhere between 700 and 800 meetings, not that I counted, but when we reflect back over 10 months of almost 3 meetings average a day, I had somewhere between 700 and 800 meetings, and here I am in detox, tore up, shredded up, doing all the damn meetings, reading the book, doing the 12x12. I was at my sponsor's hip, praying a lot, doing all the stuff, doing everything. I was becoming a part of this thing and leading meetings and getting knowledge with the book and all that stuff, and thinking I had taken steps. And here I am in a 4-day blackout and really hitting it. And my sponsor came and pulled me out of ultimately what was going to lead to death, I believe, absolutely. That relapse was no game. Not only did I pick up where I was at, but I was insanely drinking, which isn't far much from what got me here in the first place. And here I am in detox again, and I'm a mess, I'm a wreck, I had almost lost all hope. I didn't know what the hell. I was doing all this stuff, ultimately, that I didn't want to do. I was suiting up, I was showing up, I was doing this shit. And here I am, out of a blackout again. And I didn't know, man. And no way back then anyways, that I could look back, that I would know then at that time. For me, that was the not just a low point, but a breaking point for me. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I was suffering and struggling with drinking, and I knew I needed to stop drinking. I knew I needed to do something about my drinking. And when I came out of this this last drunk, there's no way I could have told you then that point in my life that was the darkest, grayest, probably about the most fearful, hopeless part of my life, man, was going to turn out to be the greatest gift in my life to this day. There's no way I could have told you that then, but I can tell you now, because it was horrible. It was horrible. It was like, fuck it, man. Death is it's on its way. I'm hopeless. I can't not drink. I can't not drink. Here I am today, a free man, and I can reflect back on that day. And I've been able to reflect back on that day many days through the years, actually. And that turned out to be the greatest gift for me in my life, because I was broken. And it didn't just happen right away. I was shook up in a wreck. It took about 3 days before this breaking point actually happened for me, because I was in distress. I was the hideous four horsemen, for those of you who don't know who they are, what they are: frustration, despair, bewilderment, and terror. And they were all on me, man, like Satan. I mean, really, it was a very dark place for me. Didn't think I was going to be able to do this thing, because I thought I was doing it, and I thought I failed. The truth of the matter is I never bought the second half of the first step, that my life was unmanageable. I didn't understand it. I didn't even know what it meant. And when I hit the true brokenness of absolute powerlessness, then I realized that with no power, how am I able to manage my life? I can't manage my life. I have no power. I understood that for the first time in hundreds of meetings and months and months and months of coming here. And so I had this brokenness happen. And a true, again, it's in spite of me, it was a gift. A true understanding of not just not having all the answers, but not having any answers. I no longer didn't have all the answers. I didn't have any answers. So it was time. It was time. So I received this gift of humility. Not that I have it by perfection by any means, but I got enough of a gift of humility in me to start listening, paying attention, and taking direction, no matter how right or wrong it seemed to me, because before I was picking and choosing what I was going to apply and not. And it was very little as far as what I was going to apply, because I was the chief critic that we hear about. I was the chief critic. I was sharp. I was pretty sharp. I was going to get this shit. I was going to be on my way. As soon as I heard the right sentence, the secret in that fat ass book, as soon as I found the secret, I'm out of here. That disappeared in that breaking. It was no longer, I understood what a day meant. When they said this get in the moment thing and one day at a time, I didn't understand that. One day at a time for how long was my mentality? One day at a time for how long? Because I got shit to do, you know? So, but as a result of that breaking point, I also realized, you know what, man? This box, this square, this one box that's called today, this is the only place I live. It's not a reality out here yet. It's not. And if it should come by grace, if I'm able to wake up another day, I'll deal with that day in its day. You know, that was a new thing to me, a new awareness. That came to me in spite of me, man. So when I'm praying in bed with my knees or with my fists clenched at my side, I'm freezing my ass off and sweating like a sieve. And then I would get hotter than shit and not sweat. And I was doing that. And I know it was the DTs. But I'm going through this shit. And I'm praying. I'm praying almost nonstop in detox. Almost nonstop I'm praying the whole time. Virtually the whole time. And back then they had this detox tea shit. I'd get up and I'd go get that. And then I'd drink that and I'd go back and I'd be back in prayer. Because I didn't know what else to do. And this thought came through my mind that we stood at the turning point. We asked His protection and care with complete abandon. We stood at the turning point. We asked His protection. I was asking God, help, reveal something. Something's got to change, Lord, all that stuff. And that came to my mind, and it kept running and running through and running through to the point where I started praying to take that away from me. It was driving me nuts. And it wouldn't go away, and I realized this is the truth of the story, man. This is my story. This is how it worked for me. I realized that I was at the turning point of my life. Something was speaking to me that I didn't put there. I did not put that saying there. Yeah, I heard it hundreds of times, but I didn't put it there. There's a lot of other shit I heard. Why was that there? I stood at the turning point, even though I was laying down, clenched up, going through shit. I stood at the turning point, and it was either then or never that I had to ask. That I personally had to ask Him for His protection and care, literally abandoning myself into His direction and his presence, His protection. And I did that. And when that happened for me, it felt like the whole world lifted up. The weight of the world just pulled off of me, man. And I was like, wow. Holy shit. Holy shit. That's when the realization of the unmanageability and the powerlessness and all these things that I'd been hearing finally took root. And I remember thinking, now what? You know, so I got to come in, and my 13th day this trip in, because I had a head full of AA with nothing moving, you know. I heard a lot of shit. I got to hear it all. And my sponsor reached out to Gussie, of all people, reached out to Gussie, and she did have a strong working knowledge of the book and the steps. There's things I didn't agree with her on later on and all that shit. But I love the woman. She was very instrumental in my recovery. My sponsor was humble enough to reach out for help. He said, he's not getting it. He's not getting it. She said, he still has an alcoholic mind. What the hell is that? That's where a psychic change, the doctor's opinion talks about, comes. When a psychic change happens, the alcoholic mind, I have an opportunity to, I don't change it. God does for me through the steps. As a result of learning, going through step three by the book and writing down my resentments, mostly against me, but others, and then seeing the true nature of the disease for the first time in my life, I realized that, you know what? When I saw my defects and fears and shortcomings, all those things on paper, it was like, if these were eliminated from my life, I would probably be floating, you know? I mean, no shit. So step six, when we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, we're like, now. So we did seven, man. I ran through the seventh step, and something happened. Something happened for me. That psychic change took place. I can stand here today and tell you this is a fact. It's not a theory. It's not a philosophy. It's not an idea. It's a fact, because I'm still sober here almost 23 years later in spite of me. That had to happen for this alcoholic. I had to have that psychic change the doctor was talking about. And a psychic change isn't for those that I hear come in here and go, yeah, well, I changed my mind and I started. That's not how it works. Not for me. I can't. I tried that shit before. I tried to act kind and tolerant and all that stuff as I'm walking off fucking burning up. Burning up. And eventually relapsing again. So a psychic change for me had evolved through working the steps, seeing my part for the first time in my life and a shitload of it, realizing that this stuff here needs to go away, man. It needs to go away. And going to the Father, step seven, humbly asking Him to remove my shortcomings, and something occurred. And of course the steps go on from there. So I know I'm only a 10 minute here. I just, for the new people, man, if you're struggling, you are in the right place. If you're struggling, you don't have to pick up. If you're struggling, there's help around here. There's people around here. Phones. Most people have a fucking cell phone these days, you know? So, I mean, it's not hard to get in touch with somebody. And if you call somebody you need to talk to and they don't answer, keep calling their ass. Well, they're going to realize something's fucking up, man, you know? And they don't give you their phone number, so you won't call them. If somebody gives you the phone number and you call and it's not them, the wrong number and shit, then they were fucking with you. But that's generally speaking, I mean, we're going to answer. The help's there. We give our numbers for a reason. At any hour of the day, any hour of the night, we're there to help, because this is not something to fuck around with. Lives are on the line here. It's a reality. And alcohol nearly killed me. And I'm convinced without a doubt that if I pick up again, I'm a goner. It ain't about freaking having a drinky poo and going out for a day. I'll drink myself to death, and I don't think it's going to take long. So I'm clean and sober by the grace of God through Alcoholics Anonymous. I prayed and begged Him for mercy, help, something, and He kept bringing me here. And then when I came here, you guys said, go to Him. And so it's the full circle deal, man. I believe that this program works, not only because of the second tradition, which in this meeting, unfortunately, probably don't hear a whole lot. But the second tradition, we have one ultimate authority, and that's a loving God. And as He may express Himself in this group conscience, as He may. So it's up to me to ask His direction for insight, sound judgment, and to try to pick the things and magnetize towards those that have something that I want. If you're new, hopefully you're doing that, man. Because the help's here. The help's here. And the program's not worked here. The program's worked usually, as far as I know, with the sponsor. And the program is the steps. And that's where we get to come here and share experience, strength, and hope. If you're new, I hope that you continue to keep coming back. Not drink in between meetings. All the shit they told me in the early days, it would drive me nuts. Now I'm parroting their shit, you know. But the truth is, if you're suffering and struggling, you're sick and tired of this shit, this is a place where it can all change, man. It can all begin right here. And, you know, so I hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving. I appreciate Tomas for asking me to be his 10 minute. And I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah.
Let's give Darren another hand real quick. Man, except for that haircut, I don't know about that thing, but So it gives me even greater pleasure to introduce our main speaker tonight, Tomas from Santa Maria. Yes.
My name is Tomas, and I am an alcoholic. True alcoholic. You know, I'm so grateful, and I want to thank you for asking me to speak. I find it a great honor and a privilege to stand behind this podium. And a lot of my story that you're going to hear tonight, it comes from standing behind the podium. Because, you know, I was a minister at one time. I was a pastor. And that's a big part of my story that you guys will hear. And I hope, I don't want to offend anybody, but a lot of my upbringing was in church. So you're going to hear a lot of, you know, some churchy terms and stuff. So, but I don't mean to offend anybody, you know, but I know this, that it's my story, but it's gotten me here. Can I know that when I came here, man, I didn't know where I was coming or going. But I thank God for the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, for having a good sponsor like Darren, you know. Darren's been sponsoring me for a few years now, and I'm just so grateful for just everything. My life began about 7 years. I was about 7 years old. I remember when I first took my first drink. It was from a Coors can. Remember the old flip tops that you tore the top off? It was my grandpa. And I remember sitting at the kitchen table with him, and he'd be smoking Winston cigarettes and drinking, you know, Coors beer. And I always thought, you know, what was that he was drinking, you know? And, you know, in the Hispanic culture, we're a trippy culture, man. You know, we like pass it down from generation to generation to generation. So he found it was going to be a kick to them to give me some alcohol. And, you know, they'd spin me around and they'd laugh. And I was, you know, it was fun because I became the life of the party at the time, you know, at 7 years old, you know. But, you know, years later, I realized, you know, it's like at 7 years old, you're innocent. You don't have the capability to make that kind of decision. All I knew is that I was making people laugh. And it made me feel good about myself, you know. As the years gone on, I kind of grew up in this. And, you know, this whole time, I was being raised in church. And my father was a pastor. So I was, you know, born and bred in church. So, you know, I went to church 9 months before I was even born. And you know what? And it's... I'm today, you know, a while ago, like, it took me a little while to kind of make the connection, because I felt lost. I felt, well, being from a church family, you know, I can't be an alcoholic. And, you know, I used to come to meeting after meeting after meeting, and I would always say, I'm Tomas, I'm alcoholic. But it was like, but I didn't understand the fact, I didn't want to understand the fact that I was a true alcoholic. And it took me years and years and years and years for me to understand and to make the connection, because I realized that relapse after relapse after relapse, the reason why I kept relapsing, because I wasn't accepting the fact that I was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like a lie within the lie. You know, but it was here, not recently, here recently that I moved back here into town, that, you know, a lot of my mentality has changed, a lot of my thinking, because and I know where it comes from, you know. But I kind of want to backtrack to how I came about coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going through a divorce in my life, and I remember, you know, I couldn't stop drinking. I had picked up that drink again. I was probably 30. Maybe 32 years old. I was married. I was living out here off of a Blosser. And I remember my wife and I were separated, you know, and I remember that, you know, she would leave during the day and I would come in after work. I would come in to home. So we were trying to close the house down because I knew I had lost everything and everything was just gone, you know. And it was funny because I would take the pictures down from the walls and I was packing everything up, and then I'd come home from work and all the pictures would be up on the walls, man. I thought I was going crazy. I thought I was going, I mean, I thought I was losing it. And you know, I'm grateful for the man who brought me to my first AA meeting. It was Wayne Schaefer, man. Believe it or not, Wayne brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous here in Santa Maria. So I'm grateful to him and how I came about in finding Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. A lot of, I've heard it, especially from where I come from, that, you know, don't go over there, those rooms are full of a bunch of crazy people, you know. And it's funny because now I find myself being that crazy people, man. I'm part of, you know, being crazy in here. It's okay, though. And I, you know what, I realize in Alcoholics Anonymous, I realize a simple fact that it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. You just got to keep doing what you're doing, and everything just has a way of working itself out. So to kind of backtrack a little bit, you know, after I got out of high school, I just kept, you know, I kept drinking, kept, you know, you guys know the deal, you know. I ended up living on the streets, and I was living under a bridge. I had hitchhiked, and I was trying to get to the Statue of Liberty in New York, and I got sidetracked, and I ended up staying in Texas. Of all places, Texas. And so I'm living under a bridge. I'm pushing a shopping cart. Family doesn't know where I'm at. Nobody knows where I'm at. I have a way of disappearing. When I want to disappear, I'll tell you what. If you want to disappear, alcohol has a way of making you disappear, doesn't it? And I disappeared, man. Nobody knew where I was at. You know, and I'm underneath that bridge. And I remember looking up in the air. And looking up and, like, seeing all that concrete and there's tire tracks on top of there, you know? And I'm wondering to myself, how in the world did I get here? How in the world did I get to this place? And I remember going down and coming down from the bridge and I went, there was a motel where the owner would let me take a shower every now and then. And I look back at my life now and, you know, it's funny because, you know, as you get older, you look at all the little signs in your life. And I look back at all the signs of my life and of where it leads you up to. And I remember I sat down in the motel, and I'll never forget this man's name. His name was Benavides. And Benavides told me, he goes, do you have a dad? Is your dad named Raymond? And I said, you know, I kind of looked at him. I said, yeah. And he goes, well, I guess he called your cousin, and your cousin, they told him that you come and shower here sometimes, you know. And he called and he's looking for you. And I remember looking down at the little coffee table, and there was a book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember picking it up and kind of flipping through the pages and kind of looking at it, you know. Never in my wildest dream would I ever, you know, think that this was going to become a way of life for me. That this book right here is going to be an instrument that God is going to use in my life. You know? I'm a devout follower of the Bible, you know, and I read the Bible every day, you know. But I tell you what, man, getting into the big book, is there's so much freedom in the big book. A freedom that I never realized. And back then, you know, you open it up, and as I was reading it, and it was like, you know, I felt these little, I call them rays of hope. That were shooting through my body, and it was like, but I could see God was already making a way for me to get here, you know. So I'm over there in Texas, and I don't know what, you know. Well, I pick up the phone, I call my dad, you know. My dad said, you know, son, I think it's time for you to come home, you know. So I came, you know, he bought me a ticket, and I came home. I came back to California. Never made it to the Statue of Liberty, but I'll tell you what, I saw a lot of the states, this disease has a way of taking you places that you never dreamed you'd be, man. And it's funny because, you know, I call it a disease because it's cancer, man. And I used to think that this room was full of lies, and like, you guys, the life you guys are living is all a lie. You guys come in here and you know what you guys are saying, it's not true. Everyone's drinking when they get out. Everyone's partying. You guys are connecting here, hooking up, and then going out there and partying. You know? And that was my whole mindset on all this whole thing. And it wasn't up until, you know, picking up that book and you start reading it little by little, you know, and it was like God was already starting to cultivate something in my heart. Something needed to be cultivated and uprooted, that that was that I myself, you know, I opened the door, you know, and that was to the first string. It was that first string. I realized the victories that I have in my life, you know, they all stem from one thing. Not taking that first string, man. There's so much power. And just that one thing right there is not picking up that first string. But I realized that when you don't pick up that first string, that you got there's something else you got to start working on. Character. Character. So here I am. I'm back in California. Things start going good. So I go to Bible seminary, and I'm in Pasadena at the time. So a few years go by, and things are going great, you know. And I take my first youth pastoring position, and I'm a youth pastor. I'm in San Fernando Valley, and I work with a lot of the inner city kids, a lot of the gang kids, you know. And what happened was one night, it's about probably 1:30 in the morning, and we had an event, you know. And I walk in, and I went somewhere I shouldn't have went. I went to the store by myself at 1:30 in the morning. Okay, and to top it off, you know, everything's going great. Ministry's flourishing. Kids are having a ball. Then the thinking started up. That stinking thinking. Everyone talks about, and you hear this over and over in the meetings. You know that stinking thinking. You didn't. So here I am. I'm standing there, and I was going to get a rock star, so I don't remember what I was going to get, but I find myself standing in front of the beer aisle, you know, and I'm looking at it, and I thought to myself, I'm going to treat myself. And this is coming from a guy who used to live under a bridge who drank a gallon of vodka a day. I'm going to treat myself, you know. So I relapsed. I picked up that drink, you know. And I thought to myself, oh, man, how can I face these kids? And I get, you know, the church. And it started me up again, man. And I spiraled out of control. Lost everything. Everything was gone within, like, probably 3 weeks, man. Everything was gone. So this is up to, and I'm sharing this because this is what leads me up to moving here to Santa Maria. So my sister called me, and she says, you know, you need a change, you know, there's something, something's happening, something's not, you're not doing something that you should be doing. You're not doing the right thing. So she calls me up, she goes, we're living in a town called Santa Maria. She goes, maybe you should come down here, you know. And I thought to myself, oh, well, all right, I'll give it a shot, you know. Make that geographical, you know what I mean? That's when I realized for the first time in my life, no matter what you do, you can't outrun yourself. And I realized that everywhere I go, there I am. And there comes that word up again, character, pride, all these things. So I come back over here, and I move over here to Santa Maria, and you know, it's getting familiar with everything and new people. I hadn't met Wayne yet. And so coming over here, I got a job over here at Sawyer's Building Supply. You guys heard of Sawyer's Building? I worked there for a while, and I met Joe there. He's become a really good friend. But I share that because, you know, I look back at my life and look back at those moments, you know, and it was like relapses started reoccurring more and more in my life. By this time, you know, I'm getting up in age, and I'm like, you know, like Darren shared, you know, I'm crying out, God, man, just stop. Why can't this thing shut up? Why can't this thing stop? Why can't I not think about the drink? And I couldn't understand that. I'm doing everything I should be doing. I'm going to church. You know, I'm giving my offerings. And I'm doing all this stuff. And I'm realizing that I'm doing everything that I shouldn't be doing versus everything that I should be doing. Everything had become a performance to me. You know, and I learned early on in my life about performing, you know. So I'm over here, and so I decide, hey, man, I'll get married. That'll fix me. Everywhere I go, she's going to be by my side. That's what's going through my mind. You know what I mean? She's going to not only fix me, but, you know, at those, you know, I'll have somebody to talk to. No communication whatsoever. Bad, bad decision on that one. I'll have somebody to hang out with. Never together. You know, it's part of my friends, but I can have sex anytime I want. That was a joke. All that came on was bills. More bills. More bills, man. The house payment. The car payment, you know. And then on top of that, the drink, you know. And yet I'm still in the church. Hiding out as a dry drunk, man. Performing, you know. Doing everything, you know, people pleasing, doing all these character deeds. They're all out of control, man. I mean, everything's I'm nothing but a prideful, fat, jealous, angry, resentful, machissimo perro, man. That's all I was, you know. Looking back at, you know, you look back at it now, it's funny because, you know, those moments that you have in your life, you know, where you look back and you say, God, I can't believe I used to be like that. Like, that was me? I seen my ex-wife one time since our divorce, you know, and I think some amends aren't, you know, I know we come to the point, you know, we have to make those amends, you know. I think some of those amends, you know, but they're mainly meant for us, for me. I have to make that amends to myself. So here I am in this marriage that's just going haywire, you know. I mean, it's going nuts. I don't know whether, you know, I don't know where up and down. I'm going to work, just, you know, all these things are just piled up on me, and I'm just, you know, come home from work, you take a couple of drinks over here, you know, you do the whole thing, and I'm drinking cologne. I'm drinking cologne to try to hide the smell, you know, thinking this is going to hide the smell. Dang, that's my mentality, that's my thinking, you know, can't let her smell me. But it's funny because, you know, the disease of alcoholism blinded me to, why can't she smell me? Why can't she just love me? Why can't I just love her? So I didn't know how to love. I didn't know how to be a husband. I didn't know how to be a companion. I didn't know how to just sit down and talk with her, talk with him. You know, the disease had me so blind to all this stuff. You know, simple things in life that I took for granted. The simplicity in life that I made so complicated. And the things that should have been so complicated, I simplified them. And it was so easy to do because, you know, that's what the disease tells you. It's, you know, you got one on one shoulder and the other one on the other shoulder. It's like, I was like this. So all this is happening, and then, you know, we get divorced, you know. And then that's when I really lost it. I really lost it at that moment. You know, it was at that time that I started really coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Felicia remembers me. Remember when I came in? Ugh, that was a mess. I remember meeting Darren for the first time. I started coming to the meetings, and, you know, it's funny because I share this a little bit, but I don't share this enough, you know. I was this meeting's right here, the 5:30 meeting. I was this meeting's first secretary. We started this meeting. Me and the old man over there, he sit over there. Old man Cliff, man. I remember when he asked me about starting this meeting up. It was Terry, myself, and then there was another Terry. Well, it was old man Terry. I'm sorry, not old man Cliff, old man Terry. It was old man Terry, and then Terry, and myself. And we all sat here one day and we talked about the meeting. we were at a meeting, and he just asked me, "Hey, man, let's start a meeting. We want to call it the happy hour. It's a 5:30 because this meeting right here, this is the importance of this meeting for me, is because this is my drinking time. I get off work, and right here, this is the pivotal moment in my life right here. This is a lot. It makes me, it breaks me. So and when he told me that, I said, "Yeah, man, I'll do it, man." Started a meeting. I remember there was just at times it was just us four, sitting at the right there, just us four, through the whole hour. You know, looking at each other. You know, you can only speak so long to somebody about, you know, how's your dog doing. But we kept it up. We kept it up. And Terry goes, "You watch. Someday, this meeting is going to be fruitful." Those were his exact words to me. He goes, "You hang in here, because what we're doing is we're trailblazing," is what he told me. He goes, "We're trailblazing for this meeting." So on my last relapse, I left Santa Maria. And then when I left here, man, I that's when I really lost it again. And I ended up going to a rehab. It had been probably my 18th rehab in my life, just like everybody else, you know. I've been to jail in 27 different counties. I got 3 prison terms underneath my belt, a couple violations, and yet I'm still a pastor, hanging in there. I'm still hanging in there. But you know what? I realize it takes more to be a pastor, you know. It's working the steps and calling my sponsor, you know. A lot of what's happened to me in the last little bit, it's happened to me in the last few years of my life, is I've had a lot of self-forgiveness, and I've had to really forgive myself, because there's nothing I can't do, you know. There's some people, places, and things that people I've hurt, things, and I realize, you know what, I can't do anything about it no more. Like, let it go, Tomas. Just let it go, bro. Like, you're never going to live. You know, it felt like this is what it felt like I was living my life. Like, I was in a parking lot. And I was trying to find my way out. And there's a speed bump at the last little, you know, to try to get out. And every time I'd get going, I'd hit that stupid speed bump and it would stop me. In the last few years of my life, I finally got over the speed bump, man. You know, and I moved away. And I didn't say bye to nobody. I just left. I was so just up. I was just like, I wanted to kill myself, man. I was in that rehab, and I curled up in a ball, man. I was on the floor, man, and I was just saying, "Just God, just take my life. Just, I don't want to live, man. I don't want to live." Today, that prayer has changed. Today, I say, "Thank God that I'm alive." Every morning I wake up, you know, every morning I wake up and I pray. And I give myself a good 30 minutes every morning. And I pray it. And I get in God's word. And I share my scriptures with people. There are certain people that I share my scriptures with. And I don't do that. I do that for a reason. I learned that in these meetings, you can't keep if you don't give it away. You can't, it's not gonna like digest in me if I don't give it away. You know, coming this time around and meeting up, and it's just been a blessing, you know. I hope I'm not boring you guys. Am I boring you guys? But with all the church stuff, you know, it's my story, man, and I'm sticking to it. Man, it's been a whirlwind, but I thank God, you know, today. You know, me and Darren, you know, we're starting the steps up again. I've been real hesitant. I've been a little bit for the sake of, because I really, really want to get an understanding. I want to get a grip on myself. I want to get a grip on myself. You know, my last streak was July 10th of a few years ago. Now what happened is this. I've changed a lot in my ways. And even Darren was, we were just talking about that right now as we were driving up. Darren goes, "Man, you've changed a lot, you know, you've changed a lot." You know, and I realize that all I have is right now, this moment, you know. You guys have talked GMR, you know, seen him. When I walked into that first meeting, he was sitting right there, and I said, he hasn't moved. He probably sleeps there, man. But that's the faithfulness of this, of what the meeting, you know, that's fruit from this meeting, you know. It's just, there's so much, it's so good, you know. How much time do I have left? 15 minutes? Okay. So coming to here where I'm at right now, just in my life today, the responsibility, you know, working, being in recovery, I'm happy. My family knows that I'm in recovery, and they know they what these meetings what they do to, they do for me. They understand all that, you know. Seeing these steps and looking at them, it's like the spiritual mirror that I'm really looking at. You know, there was a time when I was looking at that spiritual mirror and you're seeing it through the eyes of alcoholism. You're seeing it through the eyes of the disease. And I realized that for my life, that when I see, you know, being active in that kind of thinking, that you never see anything. You don't see nothing the way it really really is. It doesn't, it skews you. You know, I had this filtering process, the way I filter things, the way I process things, you know. It's like that had to get worked on right there, you know? Because I realize how deep this disease really is, man. Like this, it's, you know, they say it's cunning, it's baffling, you know? It is, man. It'll sideswipe you. It'll take your breath out. It'll leave you with nothing. And you still think you have everything. Really, man. Right. I learned something. The better my attitude, the higher my altitude in life. If I have a good attitude about my day and what's going to come, I know where I'm at. I know where I'm at because I have faith. You know, I used to say a lot of things come from, you know, making those bad decisions. And I realized that, you know what? I don't have to make those bad decisions no more. You know, I can't do anything. I just have to sit there and just walk through it. You know, just walk through it. The storms are going to come, man. Storms of life. It's normal. If you didn't have a storm in your life or you didn't have a bad day, you're not normal. I don't think you are. But I've learned that coming to these meetings, you know, and watching people, how they go through things. It's funny how you can sit down. And you know what's funny? Is the people who I thought that I wouldn't get along with, those people are the people that I'm really getting along with. You know, you look at the, you know, us older generation. You know, it's funny because you come in, you're young, and you don't realize your age. You know, you think to yourself, age ain't gonna catch up to me. Well, it's caught up to me. It's really caught up to me. But I'm seeing, you know what? There's so much future and there's so much hope in the steps, and working, and being around this the fellowship and being in these meetings. You know. Life's good for me, you know. Today, you know, I belong to an organization. I don't want to put their name out there, but I belong to the organization for 15 years. And in the 15 years that I belong to them, I had become a home director. So I was running men's homes, you know. I was a director, and I got pretty good at it. I had a home of I had the fourth largest home in the organization. I had the fourth largest home in the world. I had a home of about 50 men. There was a few men that we in our conferences that we had, that I would, from the fellowship, that they saw me and they were like, "There you are. Where you been?" I'm like, "I'm men's home director." They understood what I was doing, you know. So I got blessed. I was given the opportunity, and I got asked to go start some homes up. So, you know, I started up a few other men's homes here in California. I've been up to the Bay Area. That's where I first came from. When I was gone, I was up in the Bay Area for a while. And I was helping out the home in Antioch. So, you know, ministry has taken me in a lot of different directions. They're good directions. You know, but I don't belong to that organization no more. And I realized a lot about religion versus relationship. You know, being in recovery, and you know, I don't know, man. I realized so much that my relationship with my higher power is everything. And there's so much freedom, and there's so many blessings that he has. And I mean, in order for me to attain those blessings and to keep them going, you know, you got to be a blessing to everybody. You know, somebody texted me the other day, be a blessing. Be a blessing. You know? And you know what? I realized, man, like, we're blessed. We're truly blessed. You're in a meeting right now. You have a shot at it. You're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't mean that you're going to be a millionaire. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to fly on top of the world, you know. All it's giving us is what? A fighting chance to keep going another day. And that's all I have, is that other day. You know, today I'm a leader at my church, and I'm in charge of the building. And I'm really grateful for that, you know, and I enjoy serving, and I enjoy doing these things, you know. And I always tell people, you know, if anybody needs prayer, man, just talk to me. When I come into the meetings, a lot of times, you know, I don't come to a lot of meetings like I, you know, gotta go to a meeting every day, you know. I get off work, and I got a lot of responsibilities with my church. I have a church meeting on Tuesday. I have a church meeting on Monday. And that's because of where I'm at. But it's my life, though, you know? And I like my life. I like coming to the meetings, and I get what I get because I realize that, you know, what God gives me in these meetings, it's not meant for me to keep it in these meetings. It's meant for me to go out there and tell people, where did you get this from? You know where I got it from? Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tell the people in my church, I tell them I'm in recovery. And why are you so happy? Because AA. Simple. AA. And I'm proud to say that. I wasn't, it took a lot. It took a lot for me to say that, huh? It took a lot for me to say it. But the other day I was talking to him and I told him, why are you so happy, you know? You're always smiling, dude. Why? Because I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's giving me my life back. You know what it's giving me? It's giving me my thinking back. I'm able to process. You know, at work, I have the shop keys. 4 months I was with this company. Boom. You sure? You know what I could do with this key? Huh? But that's what recovery gives you, man. It gives you responsibility. Let's go back to that character thing. You know, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, has given me so much character, man, that people are trusting me with their keys. You know, people invite me into their house to work on them. You know, and it feels good to be trustworthy. It feels good, but those are direct results of the steps of meeting with my sponsor, you know. And not wanting, I tell myself, call him and tell him what's going on. Tell him what's going on, you know. Do I call him a lot? It's like this. I keep in touch with them every day through text. But I've learned to live my life so simple that it's like it's not that bad. I live a boring life. Right, the highlight of my evening is deciding where I'm going to have for dinner. That's the excitement of my evening. But it's fun. Because tomorrow morning I get to get up, put my boots on, I get to go to work and do it all over again. You know, the greatest example to the outside world of Alcoholics Anonymous is just being honest, being obedient, being willing, having these things, you know. Going back to that character, man. You know, and it's because of direct result of coming to these meetings, of being in recovery. You know? I had about 5 minutes, huh? So, I'm grateful today. I'm truly grateful, you know? I want to share this with you. I was on a missionary. I've done 13 missionary trips. I want to share this with you guys. I will end with this story. So, I go to, and it's a third world country. We go to the back to the camps, and it's a cardboard city. No electricity, no running water, none of that. And I bump into this guy, and he's a one-legged man. and he only has one leg. And I asked him what happened. Because I was working in the fields, you know, trying to support my family, and a snake bit me, and they had to amputate my leg, you know. And so I said, you know. I said, well, where's your family? He goes, I lost my family. I lost everything, you know. I said, well, I'm going back to the States, and I'll be back in a few weeks. Is there anything you need? And he goes, yeah, you know what? I need a mattress. Hang in there with me on this. The ending's really good. Trust me. Because I need a mattress. Can you bring me back a mattress? Yeah. I'll bring you back a mattress. Take them back, and we come up back over here, you know, go back down there, and we got a mattress, take them down, go down to the camp, see how hopefully it's still there, you know. Still there. The guy's still hopping on one leg, you know. Come in with a mattress, you know. Hey, got your mattress. Got him a jacket, some other stuff. So I told him, well, I'll be back in a few weeks. Is there anything you need from the States, you know? He said, well, you have a Bible. Can you give me a Bible? I said, yeah, bring you a Bible. Came back, gave him a Bible. I asked him again. I said, hey, man, I'm going to take off, and I'm gonna be back, you know, a few weeks, a couple months. You know, you need anything? And he said, yeah. He goes, I need a leg. Can you give me a leg? And by this time, I had built a relationship with this guy. His name was Gerardo. I'll never forget his name. And I looked at him, and I said the darnest thing I could have said, man. I said, okay. I said, okay. I come back to the States, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, God, what did I get myself into, man? I said, if you're out there, and I know you are, you got to work this one out. So it's coming like days before we got to leave, you know, nothing. No leg, nothing. You know, I'm like, wait, looking in the mail, wait for it. Day before, somebody gives me a call. They said, hey, are you Tomas? You the guy that does the missionary trips now? Yeah, that's me. I'm over here in San Luis Obispo, and my uncle just passed away, and I have a bunch of clothes, suits, and maybe you might want to come down here and take it. I said, I'll be right there, you know. Get in my little truck, going down San Luis, you know. And I'm looking in there, and I'm a little bummed, you know. I got to take out because I'm leaving the next day, you know. She's giving me suits, and she's, you know, the money, they're doing it. And she tells me, she goes, I don't want to be, you know, morbid or anything. She goes, but I want to, if there's something, I have something that was my uncle's, and I don't know if you can use it or not, you know. And I looked at her, I was like, what is it, you know? Well, my uncle passed away, and years ago, he lost his leg, and I have a prosthetic leg. Do you need it? And I said, heck yeah! I took that thing down there, man. I got down to that camp, man. I went running to him, man. I had it in a box. I said, here. He said, what is it? I said, just open it. Put it on. He opened it up, man. He was like, it's a leg. It's a leg. We put it on, and it took him a little bit to, you know. And I share that story because I'm leaving that camp. I went back to the city, and I turned a corner, and I was wondering, what am I going to do tonight? And I walked up, and I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in a foreign country. So not only do I have faith, but I have recovery. I got the best of both worlds. We all do. The best of worlds, both worlds, from a higher power who has so much blessings in store for all of us. All of us, man. Trust me. I serve a miracle-working God. Because you know why? Because I'm a miracle. And if you ever doubt the existence of God, if you ever think there is no God, look in the mirror. Look in the mirror. Because he's right in front of you. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Thank you for letting me share.
Let's give Tomas another hand.